very special guest. Her name is Joan Swartz. This will be the first time that she has ever shared her experience publicly with anyone. So I want you to understand that this is a very profound experience in a person's life, and it's also very difficult at times to share this in such an open forum. It takes a great amount of courage and strength to do that, and so I encourage all of you out there to, you know, please be respectful of Joan and understand that in a near-death experience that often there are things that, you know, are really very special in that experience that a person may not wish to share in a group setting. And so please be respectful of that. So without further ado, I would – oh, one other thing. If you will just hold your questions until – she's ready to take them, that would be really very appreciative. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Joan Swartz to you.
I think I'm more comfortable with this one than with this one. So. This is a new experience for me, and so I ask you to join me in a silent prayer that I may say to you the things that our Creator would want you to know, and those things which may bring resonance to your soul and to your heart. each one of you, and I know that there's many here, I could feel the energy when you were walking in, have also experienced near death. And as each one of you know, these are really personal experiences, and therefore us. I never dreamed that I would ever be up here sharing with you, or ever in my life that I ever dreamed that I would be sharing these experiences from a pulpit with anyone. I've shared bits and pieces now and then with friends, and I've shared just a little bit. But I've never, ever told anyone the whole story, nor have I ever, I've never felt inclined to. There's been moments when I knew that it would touch somebody's heart that I would say something, but I've never felt inspired. And when I was asked if I would do this, my first thought was no. That's not for me. These are really private experiences. And then it moved on me, and the Spirit just kept touching me, telling me, you know, it's time for you to share these things. And I thought it was really interesting the day that I was asked if I would do this, when Dave called me on my horoscope that day on the computer, said it doesn't matter basically what you've been through. What's important is that you share what you have learned and your knowledge to help others. Okay. I'm being told that it's time to share these with you. my children haven't really heard these stories either. So even though they were with me on parts of the situations that I've been in, I've never shared with them, and I asked them not to come tonight. So and I have a reason in doing that. However, I do have their support. I've had three near-death experiences, and from that, I have learned different things every time. Not one was the same. And each experience that we have is for our own growth and for our own purpose, and what we are to learn from it is for us. But I can say that each one of us have more than one opportunity to leave here, that there isn't a fixed time to say, you know, like, I'm going to live 93 years and I'm leaving. We each have opportunities, and it's according to where we are when those portals open up that we decide to stay or to go. I worked with one client in a session that we were working on, and she had a lot of real heartache and real sorrow. And the session that we worked on, she went through several doors and opened up different doors to look at where she wanted to go and what she wanted to accomplish. Never did I realize that while we were working that she was opening that door that would help her to exit. And it wasn't within a month after I worked with her that she made her exit. And it was a tragic car accident, but at the very same time, it was perfect. It was perfect for her, it was perfect for her family, and for the lessons that everyone was supposed to learn. And I have lost a child through death, which was also perfect. I had seen his death in a dream several years before. However, in the dream, I didn't understand that's what I was seeing. It was after that that it was made known to me that that was his time. And so I feel that we are prepared for these experiences that we have. And my son died a very peaceful death. He just went to sleep quietly, never woke up, and there was absolutely no trauma surrounding his death. So however we choose these portals to exit, I really feel it's our time. I chose to go with my two sons on a river rafting trip. They were teenagers, and I thought this was going to be really a fun experience. And I had a foster boy living with me in my home at that time. And we had invited his mother to go with us, thinking that maybe we could help bridge the gap between the two of them, and that this would give them an opportunity to bond. Pardon me. And anyway, we went to Yellowstone National Park. And I don't know how many of you have been down the Snake River in Yellowstone. Some years it's very quiet and gentle. This year that we chose to go, the waters had been high. I don't know if you remember when we had all the mudslides here in Davis County, but that was the year that we chose to go to Yellowstone. And of course, the river that year was extremely high. And there had been a death just a few days before we had been there on a river rafting trip. And we went with a large group of people. We had experienced people who had been guides going down the river. And but it was even more for them than what they had realized it would be. And some of the rafts that had gone down, it was not a pleasant experience for a lot of the rafters, put it that way, because the river was too high. And so a group of people had decided at the beginning that they would tend some of the children for some of the other people that were going down, knowing that some of the guides would take them down when everybody else was through. But this was before we understood, you know, how rough a trip it was. And no one wanted to take that group of people back because we all felt really lucky to make it down the first time without any incidents. And the people, there were six of them, that said, well, if nobody will take us, we'll go ourselves. And none of them had ever been on a river raft before, so they were not aware, you know, of how to negotiate a raft even. So the leader of our group said, I'll take you if I can get one other person to go with me. And bless my son, he said, I'll go. And boy, the spirit said to me, no, you'll go with him because he won't come back. And so I knew I went with him. So that he would come back. And I knew it was serious. I knew that this was not going to be an easy trip down. My other son, my youngest son, the one that has passed away since, said, you don't go. This is not a good thing, and I can't watch. I can't stand here and watch. So I'm leaving, and he left. He wouldn't even participate with us. And we couldn't change my son's mind, so therefore you couldn't change mine either. And so We took, there were four of us, my little foster son said, I'm going too. So there were 10 of us in the raft. And we went down 7 miles, and out of all the day's journey, it was the easiest trip. It was perfect. There wasn't a snag. It was peaceful, but there was just this calm kind of feeling coming, like the calm before a storm. And we'd made it down. We thought, gosh, this is wonderful. We haven't had a problem until we hit lunch counter. I don't know if any of you know what lunch counter is, but it's the worst rapid on the trip down. And we went into it. We hit it wrong. And our raft stood up on end and threw out my son and the main guide. And the raft came down on the other 8 of us. And the fellow sitting directly across from me didn't know how to swim, and he panicked. And he grabbed a hold of me and was climbing up me, which was pushing me farther down. And I got caught in the water hydraulics underneath. And I knew I couldn't get out. And I knew, I don't know how to explain the feeling I had. But I could feel the churning and going around and around and around. And all of a sudden, it was absolutely peaceful. It was the most beautiful peace I had ever experienced in my life. And it was wonderful. And all of a sudden, I was watching everything that was going on. And then I realized I could see everything going around me. And I could see other people. But however, they didn't look like you. Have you ever seen these saran wrap, that, you know, the clear saran wrap that kind of sparkles? The only way I know how to describe the beings, and there were just, I can't tell you how many. They were just surrounding me everywhere. Were like these little sparkly human or beings. And there was such love and such compassion. And their concern, you could talk through telepathy. There was no need to talk with your voice. And I was observing these beings, and they were so concerned about these people that were on this raft. And they had such compassion. And it was like all of a sudden, I mean, there was no fear, there was no weight. It was peaceful. It's the most beautiful feeling I have ever experienced in my life, ever, bar anything. And as I began to watch, I could see past, I could see present, and I could see what was going on right now. And it's like I could see that this body, and I had a hot pink suit on, and I could see them taking this body out of the river. I could see the grief that they were going through, and I had such compassion for them. And I could try to talk to them, and they didn't hear me. And then I could see, you know, beyond that, I could see, you know, other people doing other things. And with the knowledge that I have in this life, the only way I know how to express what I saw over there is that there was no ego. No one was concerned about themselves. There was just compassion for others. There was no concern of self. It's like we were one whole, everyone working with the same kind of energy, communicating whatever they were doing. And then I realized that I was me, that I wasn't my body that I saw down there, that body was something else. I didn't even really recognize it as mine. But I know that I exist eternally as me, that I have always existed, that this has that no matter how many times or how many bodies we may have, that we are an identity. And after I realized this, then a voice said to me, and it came from back here. I never did see the actual person that had the voice. And he said, "You have to go back." He said, "I command you to go back to your body and bring your body to the top." And my body at this point, because I had seen in the future, I had seen actually the drowning. And I could hear the leader's prayer that day as we got together. He had prayed, for our group that there would be no tragedies. And my compassion for him was, oh, there's a tragedy. I had such feelings of compassion for what he was going through because he felt so responsible for organizing this and putting it together. And so when I was commanded to go back, my body was down underneath a ledge. It had, it's like it was, the way the water was churning, it had pushed it into an area to where it would not have been found. They would have had to have had, you know, a lot of divers to go into where my body was. And I can remember having to go into my body, in that water underneath. And the amazing thing was that my body was transparent. It's like my body was an eye. I could see everything. I could see all the rocks. I could see the water. I could see everything. And I knew how to get that body free and bring it to the top. And as I brought it, was bringing it to the top, I could feel the weight of this physical world. I could feel fear, which is only in this realm. It is not in the spirit realm. There isn't that emotion at all. It has to do only with here. I could feel the weight of the water. I could feel the fear. I was looking up and I could see feet, you know, way above me. And I negotiated my body to come up underneath the raft a little ways downstream. And as I came up underneath the raft then, I was conscious. I lost that ability to, like an eye, like a light that I was seeing. And as I came up underneath that raft, there was absolutely no place to breathe. There was nothing I could hang on to. And then I just went dark. I don't know what happened then. When I came to again, I was hanging on to the outside of the raft. And it was going down, and the voice said, "Let go of the raft. Lay back and take a deep breath." And so I did. I just laid back, and I took a breath. And at this point, I could not swim. I had no energy. I was too weak. I don't know if I could even really breathe, other than putting my head back was clearing some air passages, I suppose. But my little foster son by this time saw me and knew that I was in trouble. He had pulled out one other person. And he came out after me and brought me in. By this time, the leader of our group got to me and he said, "Are you okay?" And the first thing I said to him was, "Why would I put my body in this kind of experience?" I was so aware that we don't have to take chances with these bodies, that these bodies are so important to us. And then my son appeared. He had made it. It took us another 5 hours to find the other people. We never did recover our raft or one oar. We found one oar. And we had to climb up. If you've been there, you have to climb up. There's just rocks. There's no way to get out except to climb. And they helped me. There was one other woman. There were five of us. Anyway, we climbed. They helped me, and we got out to the top. I shook for several days after that experience. It was so traumatic for me. And I can honestly say that that experience changed my life. I knew that there was more to life than what I had ever experienced before. I understood more about love and compassion. I understood more about how important our physical bodies were. And life took on a totally different meaning for me. And that's when I started into the hypnotherapy and into the training of the mind, because at that point I wanted to know more. I wanted to know what I was going through and what, how all of this worked. I am so grateful for that experience. I am so grateful to know that this life doesn't end here. And one thing I failed to mention with this, as I was underneath that raft, I was going through a tunnel. And the person was with me, and he was asking me questions if I wanted to go. And I said yes, and I knew within me that I could meet the Savior, that I could meet our Creator. I knew that I was at perfect peace about seeing Him. And I turned to him and I said, "But what about my kids?" And when I said that, I was back, and that's when I was on the outside of the raft. I have been really grateful for my children. I'm sure each one of you that's a parent here that has children, you know that we'll do things for our children that we would never do for ourselves. Or they motivate us to do things that we would never think about doing. And I know that I stayed here because I had a desire. You might say my responsibility with my children wasn't up, or my contract with them wasn't up. And so it's because of my children that I'm back here. And so then after that, I went into hypnotherapy. I developed my own practice. I worked with quite a lot of people. I loved it. I loved it. I could go 18 hours a day working with people, and I never got tired. But I wasn't wise. I didn't balance myself out. My life was really lopsided. I hadn't got rid of all the fear that I knew existed in this world. And I drained myself, and I was extremely tired, and I was staying in some people's home, and I knew that I needed to back off and not work as hard as I was doing. I was also trying to raise two of my grandchildren, my daughter's two children. And I'd been having headaches, but I hadn't paid attention. I thought they'd all go away. You know, if you can take enough Tylenol and take enough aspirin, that, you know, it's supposed to be the miracle cure. I had high blood pressure and didn't realize it. And so, and by the time I began to take some time off and begin to realize that I had to take care of myself, it was too late. And I was in the friend's home this one morning, and she came and sat down on the edge of my bed, and she asked me some questions. And I've always been really intuitive. I could always pick up people's feelings. I could always kind of see things that were going on in their life and always understand things that sometimes I wish I didn't know. Anyway, I felt her pain, and her pain in her own life was so intense that whatever emotion it was that I picked up from her, I took it in as my own, and I was gone. And of course, she was, you know, really frightened, and she called her daughter, and they called the paramedics, and the paramedics came, and they couldn't find a heartbeat or a pulse. Now, during this period of time, I don't know where I was because it was blank. I've had since had people tell me what happened, but anyway, they rushed me to the hospital. And in while I was in the hospital, in the emergency room, I could see that someone was working on my body. I could actually see my body on the table. And I was really kind of really upset because I thought, they're hurting her. You know, why are they doing that? I couldn't understand why they would want to hurt somebody. And what they were doing is that they had put a large needle into my heart. and had put some something in there that would stimulate my heart. And the doctor had said to the people that I was with that this is the last thing. If this doesn't work, we can't save her. And so they were doing, they had injected this stuff into my heart, and then they were, you know, massaging my heart and beating on it. And all of a sudden I could kind of feel like this pinprick, and I was way, way, way away. And I thought, I don't understand how come they're doing that to her. And then slowly I became aware that it was me, and I came back into my body. Well, I never fully recovered from that experience. It left me with a lot of stress. I was emotionally off balance. It's like I never felt really grounded to the earth after that. It's like I lived in kind of a depressed state. And for the next 10 years, I felt like this was, you know, I didn't want to do therapy with people. And so I took that time basically to heal myself. I went through a lot of emotions that caused me to escape by doing therapy 18 hours a day. And I had to look at a lot of things about myself that why I didn't want to take care of myself physically. And so that was very valuable time. I look back at that experience, and I am so grateful for that experience. There was a healer that I know of that when I had got so far, I was also in that tunnel going, and when I got so far in that tunnel, he was standing with his arms like this, and he said, "You can't come any farther. You have to go back." And that's when I came back and saw what was going on with the body on the table with the doctors. And so for whatever reason why I had to come back that time, I'm not really sure. And for the next 10 years, I was really angry that I was back here. I thought, you know, this is not a very nice place to live. There's too many hurts and pains and emotions. And so I wasn't really angry that they saved me. And then I started getting a hold of myself and the more healing that I had gone through. And life began a little bit more exciting for me. And I had married, and it was not a good experience. And so I had got a divorce. I was moving to California. I was off on a new journey. However, I wasn't going to do therapy. I was working as an undercover auditor, which was a very stressful job. I mean, anything farther away from where I should be on my path. And I was a supervisor, had several people underneath me, and we had many deadlines to make, and it was very, very stressful. And they had transferred me to California, and I thought, gosh, this is perfect. I'm getting divorced. I'm starting a new life and in a new town. And I was really excited. I thought this is going to be a real opportunity. I was there one day, and I had a brain hemorrhage. And the doctors don't understand what caused the brain hemorrhage. It wasn't high blood pressure. The nearest that we can determine, it was a microburst of psychic energy. In other words, my path, what I was here to accomplish, what I was here to do, it was time. And so that brain hemorrhage, that energy came to me. The only way I could have managed the amount of knowledge and the information that was given to me was through having the brain hemorrhage. And the headache was absolutely unreal. Have you ever heard a roar of a jet engine? Have you stood by one? Have one in your head. And that's what it was like for several months. That roar, I could not hear anything else. And because it was so painful, I was in intensive care. They were really concerned. They didn't know if I was going to make it. And they put, because I couldn't tolerate any sound, I couldn't tolerate any light, they put me in a room inside of a room. So when the doctors and nurses came in to take care of me, they had to come in with a flashlight, and I had to put a towel over my eyes because I couldn't even tolerate the flashlight. I couldn't take any noise at all. And so for a month, I feel like I spent that month with the Lord. And I was on a lot of morphine, and people could say, well, the morphine accounts for some of the experiences, but those experiences continued after I was off the morphine when I was home. We didn't know if I'd walk again. We didn't know if I was ever going to be able to see again, because I didn't have vision that you could see things. There was no television. There was nothing like that. It was total, absolute silence, except for that roar in my head. The only time that I could escape that roar in my head was to be out of my body. And I spent, and I hope what I'm going to share with you now is appropriate. And I hope that this is my experience, and in it, it's possible that some of you that you would not understand because of certain belief systems, but I realized that my physical body is only like ice cubes. If you take water and you freeze it, it's ice. You can actually see the ice. But after a period of time, the ice melts. And when it melts, it leaves a little residue of chemical. And I liken that to the body because when our spirit leaves, it decays. It goes in the earth, and it's just those chemicals. But the energy, where did it go? Where did the water go? It evaporated. We have, and what I experienced was, we actually have 12 bodies. We actually have an energy field of 12 energy fields. We only see the ice cubes. So because we see just the ice cubes, we think that that's all that exists. But if you take water, it turns into gas. If you take gas, it turns into something else. And that goes on and on. And the colors are there. There's different colors, there's different vibrations, different energy. And I would leave my body, and it was the only way I know how to explain it is I had a magic carpet. I could feel the vibration. It's a wave. And on that wave, I would go through, and I'm sure some people would call this the veil. But there is nothing still in the realm of the spirit. There is always movement. And the only way I know how to describe it is like a Priscilla curtain. You know, you can part it and it opens like this. It was like a curtain, but it was a curtain of colors. And it was a curtain of pattern. And it moved with that wave. And that curtain would part, and I would be on that wave, and I could go anywhere I wanted on that wave. And a voice would say, "She's crossing over." And I would have people there to meet me, and that they would take me to the different places. And on that journey to wherever I was going, and I'm not sure what determined what I wanted to see and what I wanted to experience, but as I was leaving, I would pass through. One time, there were like 6 Confederate soldiers. They were marching. They were still like they were in the war back in the Civil War. They were still marching. I would pass another, you know, like a man that looked really grotesque. Over here, I would pass a valley, you know, with people doing different things. it's like wherever we travel, there are different dimensions of different things going on. And the most amazing thing for me was that as I traveled, I went into other lives that I was living at the same time I'm living now. And that's what amazed me most of all. The husband that I had just divorced, we were living in another life, like in the 1950s now. Well, a little bit earlier, because they still didn't have water in their house. I saw that old porcelain sink, you know, like they used to have those square ones when they first came out with sinks. And the type of house, you know, the way it was situated. And we lived on this hill, and it kind of had a ravine, and it had a wooded area behind it. And that wooded area had caught on fire. And I kept telling them, just get the hose. You know what? The fire isn't blazing yet. If you could take the hose and put it out, nobody listened to me. You know, I was non-existent. And I was really getting frustrated because I thought, you know, it's not that difficult. You have to put a fire out if you do it now. If you don't do it now, that whole thing's going to go ablaze. Well, they didn't pay attention to me, and I really laughed because I thought, you know, this is the same as when I lived here. He didn't listen to me either. But anyway, pretty soon I left. And I could keep you, you know, busy for a long time telling you some of the different experiences that I went into. One of them that really concerned me the very most that I saw was I went into this home, and in back of this home had a path, and this path led to a destroyed city. And there was a lot of destruction in the city. It was an ancient, ancient, ancient city. And I realized that in that ancient, ancient city, that there had been a lot of knowledge. The people had had a lot of knowledge, and it was destroyed because they didn't know how to use that knowledge wisely. And that bothered me. It bothered me a lot. I pondered since the experience. You know, I've asked more, and I've been able to ride that wave. That is something that has been able to stay with me. I can still go, and I can still have experiences. I didn't have to have I don't have to have the brain damage now to go through that. But from the experience, when I was in the hospital, I had to lay perfectly still. They put plastic tubes on my arms and my legs, and they kept those pumping so that I would have circulation because they were afraid of the blood clots. And they came down one night, it was about 11 o'clock, and the people that I was staying with, for some reason, stayed late that night, and normally they didn't. The only people that I could have visit me was the family that I lived with, my grandson and granddaughter, nobody else. They wouldn't allow anyone else to even come and talk to me. And anyway, this person stayed late, and the doctor came in and he said, we don't have time. I have to do this here. There isn't time to take her upstairs for procedure. Her brain is swelling and there's infection. We have to do this right now. He said, if you've got a stomach for it, you can stay in here. If you don't, then you better leave. And he even made the nurse leave. And he put this a needle into my spine, and he drew out this stuff that looked like tomato soup and crackers off of my brain. And he said, I've never seen anything like this. And he said, we're going to have to schedule surgery in the morning. And I had been really fortunate. I had had, you know, they had run a lot of wires and things into my brain, you know, from my groin, trying to find out, you know, where the brain hemorrhage occurred, because it was in the deepest part of the brain, which if you take that to a computer, you know, your computer has all kinds of applications that won't run if the motherboard goes down. If the motherboard goes down, your computer's basically shot, even though all of the applications are working. Well, the part of my brain that was damaged was the motherboard that ran all the applications. And so they were really concerned to go in and to operate in that part of the brain. I mean, I could be a vegetable. you know, I could die, whatever. And so he left us and he said, you know, I'm going to have to take you in first thing in the morning. Well, this friend of mine just said a prayer, a very powerful prayer. And when they took me up for surgery in the morning, whatever was in my brain was gone. The fluid was clear. And the doctor said, we know that this is a miracle. And I experienced many experiences like that. And so I know from the experiences that I had in the hospital that, and I was bedridden for another 3 months after I got home. I couldn't walk by myself. If you stood me up, I just went somewhere by myself. And there was no direction. I mean, it was just like turning a loose cannon loose. And so, and I couldn't see anything. How many of you have ever seen a 3D movie? Everything at that point that I was seeing was 3D. So how would you like people coming at you all the time and to drive in a car? The poor... Oh, no! Oh, no! It was just a nightmare because it wasn't much fun for them to have me in the car. So finally we got to where I would just lay down in the back seat so I wouldn't see anything because they couldn't stand it. So... And it was a long time before I could really have vision and to be able to pick up something to read. Words meant nothing, absolutely nothing. Numbers, what are numbers? I played thousands of games of Yahtzee trying to count what five dice were. Today, I can do everything except I cannot multiply in my brain. That still doesn't want to work. And I can do it on paper. I just can't do it without writing it down. I can read. The only area that we know of that was damaged is that if you ask me to do something like Dave did, he asked me to email him an email. And if I didn't do it right then, I forget. So I have to keep these little messages to myself of what I have to do right now because if I don't write it down, I don't remember it ever. So, and that's, I can live with that. I can live with that. I am just so grateful. But through this whole thing, more than anything, it told me what my path was. I knew that I was here to be a healer. And by a healer doesn't mean I go around healing everybody. What it means is that I'm to be a light and to shine a light. And that's what each one of you are. And as we shine a light into the darkness, we turn the darkness bright. And my strong feeling was with the experience that I had with the City of Destruction, is that in all, because I could experience many things, in all of our Earth's history, we are living at the most miraculous time on this whole earth is now. There are periods of time when we've had high technology, but we didn't have wisdom and we didn't understand consequences. And so today we do understand choice and consequences. And because we understand choice and consequences, we can be peacemakers. We can't avoid destruction. We can avoid horrible, catastrophic things that could possibly take place. And the other thing that I learned was that we are not separate. Anytime we think that we're separate from each other, we aren't close to our connection to the source, to the Creator. I'm every bit as much a part of you. You're ever been much a part of me. We are really all one. And we all have within us that love, that compassion. And it's learning how, you know, I learned that having the ego is important because that gives us kind of like our vehicle to drive. But after a while, it doesn't matter what kind of vehicle you drive. And so the ego serves a purpose up to a time, but then after that, the ego isn't important anymore. and it's being able to put yourself aside and really be unselfish. And that's what we're being called on to do now as a people in our society. We can create destruction just through our thoughts of wanting to get even, or being angry at our political leaders, or being angry at our family for, you know, offending us. And what I learned in the spirit is that none of us should ever be offended by anyone for anything. We are all beautiful, we are all powerful, and we are all equal, and there is no one, not one soul, better than another. That we are all one. And I really feel that one person makes a difference. I was shown that if you take, I want each one of you just to look at your hand for a minute. Notice how many cells are in your hand. Every one of those cells are important. And your body doesn't function without them. We are, as a universe, are only one cell in a larger body. And that larger body is only one cell in a larger body. I was taken out to where I could go out to where I could see 10 or 12 bodies. That means universes, many universes in one body. How many cells do we have in our body? It never ends. It never ends. And all of those bodies are in the form of a human. And I thought that was so amazing when I saw how important the human form is. And each one of those bodies play a different part in another body. It is never ending. And what affects one cell in your body affects every cell. And so we are all one cell, you might say. So whatever affects you affects me. Whatever affects me affects you. And it goes that way. So if we were to raise our vibrational levels high enough to where we were just all that of love, can you imagine what we could accomplish here on our planet, here in our country? And instead of being angry at our leaders and angry at the people around us and angry at the people that bug us when we drive on the freeway, what happens if we just send out vibrations of love? What happens if we really prayed for them? And this is basically what my experience with a brain hemorrhage taught me. And my healing began the day I left the hospital. They carried me on a stretcher to my first workshop. And I have been in continual training classes ever since. And tomorrow I start doing my very first seminars, teaching a process that I was shown many years ago that I didn't have the courage to teach that I do now. And so basically that's my experience. Yes.
How long ago was your last your dad?
It was the 20th of January, 2001.
The reason I'm asking, the reason I ask is because I had a similar type of your dad, and I also had the memory loss, and I put the numbers in automated, and somewhere along the line I developed techniques to overcome.
Yep. Your brain can remap.
Right. And so, you know, probably you know that you're going to continue to improve.
Yes.
And
in fact, I feel like instead of being less, I'm more.
Right.
Because I have more experiences, I have more knowledge. It made me more. But what, more than anything, probably like you, it made you aware of really how valuable you are. I used to have such a terrible inferiority complex. And I was raised in a family that was extremely shame-based. And so I carried this big, humongous thing of shame around with me. I didn't know you could live without it. And one of the things that I experienced with the brain hemorrhage is that I call it a zip. And it's like it went clear back to my past, and every situation with shame just got righted and corrected. And I no longer have to carry that burden of shame, and it's absolutely wonderful to live without it. Thank you. Okay, when I said it was in 2001, it was actually 2002, because it's only been 2 years and 5 months since I've had that. The first experience was in 1984. If you remember, we had the real bad floods in 1983 and 84. It was the second year of the floods. And the second experience was July 14th of 1942. Or 1992. I just went somewhere else. No.
If you have a long comment, you may want to wait for a microphone to come on up. Otherwise, speak as loudly as you can, because otherwise they won't pick it up on the microphone.
Okay.
You made reference to yourself and your ex-husband in a scenario. Do you think there was a learning metaphor? Are you suggesting that you lived at a time in the 50s that you could have both been reincarnated?
Well, I used to think a lot about reincarnation, and I still think that we're recycled, okay? I'm not sure how that's done. However, now I strongly believe that rather than reincarnation, we are living parallel worlds, because it was going on simultaneously with this one, and the same with others. That wasn't the only experience. And they're all different time periods. So whatever the continuum of how it goes, the only way I know how to describe it, maybe many of you remember when you were kids and you played with that spool of thread that had the four nails in it, and we used to embroidery, and out of the bottom would make this long chain. It's like we are living these lives simultaneously, and they're weaving together our life of who we are. It's like our soul is in that core, and all of these lives are being weaved together. That's our core, our soul experience. So.
Do you have a talk like this?
I've never talked about it. I've said more to you than I've ever said to anyone. Well, right now, what I'm in the process of doing, I am writing a book. And it's a book of some of my experiences, because I feel like, and I'm titling it, Everybody is My Mother, because I've had such difficulty with my mother. And I would say that she's been probably the greatest teacher I could ever have. And I'm so grateful to her. But it took me many years to get there. And so because of all of those feelings that I had about her, I projected those onto everybody else, and onto husbands, and onto other relationships, and onto my children. And gosh, I saw everybody as my mother. So I'm sure this is responsible for some of the brain hemorrhage and some of the other situations that I've been through. So I'm titling it Everybody is My Mother. But at the very end, my mother is my gift. My mother is my gift. I came in on her energy. She was my teacher. She couldn't have been a better teacher. She was absolutely perfect.
Okay. Now, I had two questions, basically.
Louder?
Yeah, I had two questions, basically.
Okay.
Okay. My first question, you said you had a vision
of a
historic
city. Well, it isn't a vision. I actually went there.
Okay.
I actually experienced it.
Okay.
And I actually saw beings there, people. No. No. That was Sodom and Gomorrah. No, that wasn't that. It wasn't that time frame. So. What I saw, this is interesting that you would ask that, and I'm glad that you did. I saw several possibilities. I saw things that could happen, maybe will happen, But they're all probabilities. How do I explain this? How many of you have had a yo-yo when you were a kid? And you'd throw that yo-yo out and bring it back and throw it out? Our spirit knows everything from beginning to end. And our spirits will go out like that yo-yo, and it goes out and experiences things, and then it comes back to us. We don't know what it experienced in that process. It was on that string. But we have that knowledge here. When we see into the future, it's like that yo-yo. And so I know that there are several possibilities, that it doesn't have to go certain ways. And I also, and I don't know if you'll understand this, in my mind it's clear, but to make it clear to you, I'm not sure if I know how to do that. We live on different realms of energy. If you're down here on this realm, you see destruction. And I saw destruction. I saw horrible things that's going to happen to this planet if we don't raise the vibration level. And then I saw beautiful things, absolutely some of the most beautiful things that we could ever want to experience as a human being. New knowledge, new technology, children. Oh, I can't tell you. The beautiful children that are coming here and their futures and their possibility. So, you know, when you look into the future, you see these on different levels. It isn't like you see one event. You see possibilities. Oh, absolutely. They were sparkly like that. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. And right. In fact, if you melted your bodies here for just a minute, you would be amazed at what's among us. I'm not just talking to you guys. Here, this room is cram-packed. It is full of people from the other side wanting this information too. You know, it isn't... We have, some of us, I won't say everyone, some of us have grown up with some belief systems that kind of keep us in a box. They kind of restrict us. They tell us that it's a certain way. Well, one of the biggest shocks for me is when I got on the other side, it wasn't anything like I'd been taught. And I thought, And it really started to make me question religions. It really started to make me question philosophies. And I've done a lot of study since then because I wanted to know if it was like what I've been told or if it was really like what I saw. And I can tell you this, it's so different than what we're taught. So different. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I recognize that my own near death in 1994, she mentioned the dimensions. In all of the near death experiences that I've listened to in the last few years, yours is the first that I've connected to in that respect.
Wow. Oh, I'm grateful.
She mentioned 12. I saw 13.
Yeah. There is 13.
Yeah. She mentioned 12 and I saw 13.
Yeah.
She mentioned the beings. They're more than what you can ever imagine. But what you brought back with you, you were afraid to accept, and I feel that you've now acknowledged the work that you're intended to do.
I was afraid of myself. I was afraid of my own personal power. Mm-hmm. I was afraid to teach the things. Because I was so shame-based.
Well, it's the human part of us.
Yeah.
But the 12 dimensions, I was blown away when you mentioned it. Yeah. It's a nice thing to finally meet somebody that came from home. Good to see you again.
And it is home. And our home isn't this physical body. Mm. Our home isn't this physical body. Our home is the whole energy field. It is all 12 spaces.
By the way, you've got 3 books that you're going to write.
Oh. Yes. Do you know, I feel that I did. But I feel like it is so different than what people think it is. When I told you that I experienced seeing all the bodies, I actually saw in human form out, I don't know how far out the universe goes. I mean, space. Because it's larger than what you can ever imagine. To me, that's the Creator. It is never ending. I know it's a mystery for people because they are thinking that it's a person. Intelligence is not a person. Intelligence is energy. And there is an energy that is a directing force that does organize. Nothing happens by accident. Nothing. It may look like chaos, but it is not chaos.
So, how did the great being, how did God, how did
he arrive at being all-knowing? The answer is so simple, and I don't know if it'll answer your question. He always was. It's just that simple. We are all a part of that energy source. We are all a part of Him. We are all one mind. The only way I know how to describe what I saw is each one of you are a crystal. Each one of you are a diamond. And how many of you looked into a diamond? And there are so many facets. So many facets. Well, in each diamond, there is a flaw. And each flaw, it takes, you know, a real expert to really see the flaw many times. But that diamond isn't valuable if it doesn't have a flaw. It's not a diamond if it doesn't have a flaw. Well, we think we're experts, and we think that we can see all these flaws in ourselves as human beings. And so that's what we focus on. And we miss the real facets. We miss the real beauty of ourselves because all we see is that flaw. Well, if you take that diamond or you take that crystal, it's a part of the earth. It's a part of everything. And that's, we're connected to everything.
Is it fair to suggest that you don't see things the same way you do?
You can say that because that's definitely true. that's a good question. I still get really frustrated. I don't get angry like I used to. I feel your hurt and your sorrow, and I've had to learn how to pull back and think, okay, that's not me, that's them. I have different emotions than what I used to have because I feel everything. I feel everything. This was extremely, let me say this. For the first year, it wasn't. For the first year, I lived in that really wonderful state. I didn't understand. I was picking up everybody's feelings, however, and so any pain that I felt, it was theirs. But I had that compassion, that love, that unconditional feeling. And then I went through what's called a remapping of my brain, where I was put back into a real deep coma state. And the facilitator remapped my brain. I could tell immediately that left brain kicked in. And it was only because of the left brain kicking in that I could begin to do the math and the other things, because up until that point, forget it. There's just no way I could have done that. And so I look at people differently now. Before, I always saw people and always thought they were beautiful. And I always was able to see the good things about people. Sometimes I could see things that nobody else would see, and they couldn't understand how come I could love somebody like that, you know, that much. Now, there isn't any discernment about them. I see people much differently. I see you as all being love. I don't see the negative stuff. It's just not there. Maybe it's because I don't see the ego. I don't know if that's what you want to call it. It's just really different. And I can stand back now, and if somebody does a real blooper or something really stupid, instead of getting really upset and being offended, I can think, gosh, you know, you must have had a reason to do that, or I sure am glad I'm not in your space. So, yes. Oh, I'm so glad you asked. What is the point? Why do we leave that creative area and come here? Do you know our bodies were designed to live at least 1,000 years? And you know that we die at 100 just as we get to the point to where we could really understand how to use them? So, you know, why do we want to die? Why do we not want to stay here? What makes us not want to come here? Well, I think when we choose to come here, first of all, for an experience, that it's kind of like we plan a vacation. Some people plan it for so many weeks and so many days. Somebody plans it a year ahead of time. But I think we're all in charge of what we want to learn here. And just like that diamond that has so many facets, we want to experience everything there is. That creator, we are expressions. Our facets are expressions of the creator. There's no end. There's no end. And the other thing that I learned was, you know, we think we're really original to these emotions that we have. You know, they're not. They are out there circling around here. We choose to pick out the ones we want to suffer. So, for our experience here. Yes. I can't hear you. Okay, let's give her the mic there.
Wanted to ask you, Pat, where are you located? Are you in Salt Lake? Or
can't hear you still.
Where are you located?
Right now I'm living in West Point. I will be moving to Midvale real soon.
And when are you going to give the workshops or the...
I have one that's starting tomorrow. It will go for 4 days. And then I have another one in July, the 15th of July, for 4 days.
Can you give us information? Or?
I have, years ago, I learned a process that was given to me through the Lord that is it's a simple process of how to connect with our Creator, and that's what led me into hypnosis, because you need to be in a very, I won't say a deep state because that's not true. You need to be in what's called a theta state. That's the creative brainwave. That's where our imagination, all of our creativity takes place. In that state, whatever you imagine or visualize can take place. And so I was shown this, and at that time I had an illness. I had adrenal gland failure. And I asked how to heal myself, and I was shown that. And I did. I did heal it. And so that's what led me on my journey. I was told at that time to study everything I could to understand atoms and, you know, physics and how the atom worked, because it was through the basic law of the atom is how every law is predicated. And I can honestly tell you there's no secrets. If you understand how physics works, how that little atom operates, and how all of those electrons and neurons and protons and the quarks and all of that, how they operate, you have a perfect system to learn anything you want to learn or to create anything you want to create, because everything is operated on that law. Did I answer your question?
I just wanted to know if we're able to get into a seminar.
Yes, you can. I would rather not answer that right now. So I'm not here to promote those. So, okay, I do have some business cards I would give people after. So, any other questions? Yes. You know, I do, but I don't very seldom. I would rather teach what I know rather than to take the time now to... Well, it isn't taking the time. I would just rather put my energy in teaching people how to do it for themselves rather than do one person at a time. So... Thank you.
She's here for a whole lot of people, not one.
But I can tell you that I have seen some remarkable healings, and you can do them, and I'm sure many of you in here already are. You know, it isn't unique. There's just a process that you learn how, and you can pull a program and change it that fast. I had a gentleman the other night who had a grandson. He said, "Do you think you can do anything to help him?" And immediately I saw what the little grandson had, and I knew that he had 3 viruses going on in his brain, that they had come through the mother's placenta. She traveled out into another country, and she picked up some viruses there. So while the baby was in the womb and the blood was going through her liver, through her placenta, it picked those viruses up. And what triggers a virus? We all have them. I don't know exactly what triggered it for him. But the doctors couldn't discern what was wrong. And so I just went in and was able to destroy those viruses. And he hadn't been sleeping for 2 months except for like 10, 15 minutes at a time. And he wasn't eating. And after I worked on him, he slept that whole night. The next day he woke up twice, started eating. The fever went away, and he's fine. And it was very simple. Anyone here can do that. It isn't unique to me. Yes?
My question to you is, since you have great mental power, your opposition should be equal. Is that correct?
If you want to focus on that.
I think there is opposition.
Yeah, there is. But if you want to focus on opposition, that's what comes to you. Because I found that whatever you look at, whatever you put your energy in, whatever you feel happens. If you want to, I could really say, yeah. But I choose not to look at that. I choose to look at things that are happening to me now. My ex-husband, bless his heart, and I am so appreciative to him. I mean, we lived together for 12 years, and, you know, he was really... Anyway, I didn't appreciate him. And he was really difficult. And he could say the same thing about me. We were just not compatible. But, you know, he's the one who came to my aid. When I needed somebody to take care of me, he took me back. And so for the last year, it's not a romantic relationship between the two of us, but he has provided for me and has taken care of me till I could heal and be on my own. I am very appreciative to him, and I look at him now so differently, and I think, gosh, you know, I still don't want to be married, however. But I do appreciate him, and I do want the best for him. And I really want him to be happy. I don't want to cause him any heartache or any sorrow or unhappiness. So I could look at that as a real challenge.
But I'm thinking about more of the sense that there is a real negative entity called Satan that wants to destroy people. And I'm talking about him.
Well, but see, with my experiences, I never experienced a Satan. I never did experience a Satan. In fact, I'm not really sure he exists. Except in our minds. And I think we give that negative energy a name and a title. And I really think that he doesn't exist. But I do think negative energy exists. And we make him the monster. That's my experience. Yes?
I'm intrigued by your description of the various dimensions that you visited. And I've listened to many near-death experiencers here. And a number of them have mentioned experiencing other dimensions. Actually going to the other side in itself is visiting another dimension, although not everyone connects that. You also mentioned seeing different times. A lot of near-death experiencers have come here and mentioned that time on the other side, the way we perceive time, doesn't exist.
That's right.
So you're putting a lot of this together in a way that's very similar to the way that I'm putting a lot of this together. And I wanted to just ask you if you feel connected to those other dimensions the way you suggested, and you're seeing all these different times together simultaneously, not the same time, but happening simultaneously.
Right.
And you felt connected to many of those, and perhaps not all. Does this suggest to you that we are much more than we think we are?
Absolutely.
and that perhaps we being connected to those other times and other dimensions simultaneously, that we are ourselves multidimensional.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe that with my whole heart and being. You know, we only acknowledge the ice cube part of us, but ask the ice cube what it is. It knows. It knows it's eternal, and it knows it goes through all the different states of being. It goes from a frozen state to water to gas to vapor. It knows. We do too. Each one of us know. In fact, because we are that spark of intelligence, we do know everything. It's what we choose to remember. It's what we want to remember. And I think each of our journeys here, our search here, is wanting to remember who we are. Okay, someone else had their hand up. Yes. Right.
And so I think since they're searching, they haven't been on the experience on the road of health. They're still seeking for people who have DNDs, usually see them. So they have tactical proof. Yes, I was on those.
Right.
On those dimensions.
Right. Right.
So until you do that, you don't know what it's like.
That's right. I can say this to you. How many of you dream in here? Okay. Some people don't, believe it or not. Some people don't dream. Okay? Some people go so deep in sleep that they are disconnected from that part of themselves and they don't remember their dreams. Other people sleep so lightly that they miss their dreams. But we all dream. And we all travel. We all go back and connect to that source. Every single living being and animal. It isn't just unique to human beings. Animals dream as well. And we also, how many of you have had pets that you've lost? Do you know our pets are our guides? You know, they are our guides. They come back. Some of them don't. Some of them stay with us. But when we do go to those other dimensions, they meet us. They're with us. They love us. And, you know, they're a different, I won't say they're a different intelligence, but they don't have quite what we have for whatever reason, however they were created. But our animals are extremely important to us, extremely important. If we only knew how much they're our teachers. Do you know many of our animals, our pets, will take on our diseases? And they'll die so that we can live. So, you know, they're extremely important for us. Okay. Nope, I didn't. That doesn't mean I didn't see some strange entities. I did. Okay? But I didn't see anything like an ET. Okay? Yes. No. 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 Once you've been there, it's not a dream. When you are actually out of your body and you have left your body, there is a separation. You are in a different state. You go through a different experience. When you dream, you may be out of your body, but it's not a separation. Husbands and wives do. And you know, it's really interesting. There's a term that I call for some of these disagreeable people that we live with. They are the most noble souls in our life because they chose to play that role so that you could grow. I could not have gone through the healing that I went through had I not married my husband. And I am so grateful to him that he gave that to me. That he gave me that opportunity. And so they are noble souls. And if you're married to a noble soul, thank them because they're right there for you. Okay, someone over here, Ro. Yes.
I'd like to ask you, I've read a lot of meditative school books, and they mentioned that there is no right or wrong. And I wonder if on your path, if you can shed some light on how that looks like.
Well, do you know, when I was in that spirit world and I saw those crinkly people, those little sparkly people, there was no judgment. That's only of this earth. Our discernment is here. It isn't over there. Somehow our intelligence and our spirit knows what we're supposed to do over there. Here it's a different story. So we're given discernment, we're given judgment here to help us make choices. Our whole mission, our whole life here is to learn consequences, choices and consequences. There's no right or wrong. I didn't experience anything as a sin. I didn't experience anything as having to go through any forgiveness. I didn't go through any of that. I didn't, and maybe I shouldn't say this here, I wouldn't want to offend anyone, but there's no need for a savior other than as respect as a teacher, that he's a guide and he's a light. He didn't take sins on himself. We don't have any. Now, we can experience real deep sorrow, and we need somebody sometimes to help us out of that. And so, I think religions have created that. But I didn't experience that while I was over there. Experience is my experience. It's what I went through.
What I would encourage, I don't know, you're familiar with Carl Jung? He had probably one of the most profound near-death experiences ever recorded. His perception went to a metaphysical. I mean, if you just looked at the experience that he had and just separated out the experience, I mean, it was really just right in line with, you know, a very profound, very common near-death experience. But then when he shared how it affected his life and his perception of it, it became very metaphysical in nature. And I would encourage you to just do a search on Carl Jung and that experience. And I think you might find that there really are some very common threads there with what Joan is sharing. So.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't go through it. I was in it. And what I realized, and I'm so glad you brought this up, the tunnel is a tunnel of safety. It's what allows you to come back here.
So you were in the tunnel, but you never went through to the other side.
Mm-mm.
I think that probably answers a lot of questions for some later.
Okay.
About a friend in the
Midwest. So. Okay.
I said, first of all, that you cannot understand multiplication until you understand addition. You have to have addition first before you can go on. Next, I have my youngest son who is 25. My best friend took on his illness, and he has been extremely ill for several years, extremely ill. I didn't really understand that when she said that she did that, and I want to know if she can now consciously, I think that must have been an unconscious process, but if she can consciously give that up now and let that go,
you know,
for her life.
I couldn't answer for her. You know, I don't know, you know, what agreements or what contracts they have, okay? But should that contract be allowed, whatever, there are ways that she can overcome that.
Thank you. Also, this has been such a Cairo moment in my life this evening. I think that there are so many, many people that feel as I do and would just like to take a few seconds, since you are the sensitive person that you are, for us to give you all of our love.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. This lady up here. Okay. No, let me backtrack just a little. I haven't told you everything of the experience. Okay, there is so much more. Okay. Well, let's back up for a minute. I'm sorry I have offended any of you with saying that. Okay. My experience, some people do see the Savior, and I will never discount that is real for them. I didn't have that experience. I knew that I could see him. Okay? I knew I could, and I knew I would have peace. So let's clarify that. Now, I didn't feel a need for a Savior. I didn't feel a need for repentance or forgiveness. That was not my journey. Now, maybe somebody else's journey, that is. Mine was not that. But I can tell you this much. The things that I learned there has created what I believe in. And it was different than what I believed before.
Most of you know me. I sound off frequently. So, and I hope you'll let me sound off.
Okay.
I've interviewed dozens, hundreds of people who've had near-death experiences, and many of them are in my books. Many of them are in, well, while we're selling books, take a look. But one of the things I found that is that, and you said it, is that the experience that these people have is a valid experience, but it's an experience for them. And when we tend to extrapolate that into our culture, our religion, our belief system, or whatever, sometimes it doesn't fit, or we think it doesn't fit. And I remember the first time I read of this story, and I've told some of you this before, of the lady who died, and her daughter then had a near-death experience. And she remembered, it was in England,